Welcome to the Workflow Show. I'm Merrill Davis alongside my co-host Nick Gold, episode 110. Today we're going to talk about upgrades. To upgrade or not to upgrade?
That is the question.
Whether it is nobler to upgrade or not upgrade?
Way too literary. We're not that smart.
No. That's what non-literary people do, is they quote Shakespeare.
Usually that single line.
Yes.
But we are talking about upgrades.
Indeed.
And what do we mean by that?
Well, I guess we're talking more in the workstation-centric part of things. When is it good to upgrade? We've seen a significant change in the landscape of just the workstation environment in the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, we've seen both extreme changes on the software front, and for us Mac professional users, maybe not a whole lot of changes on the hardware side, but now some whole new changed approaches. Might one want to use laptops instead of a full-on workstation? Might one want to use an iMac? So there's upgrades to your hardware, to your core system, to the peripherals that you use. There's all these Thunderbolt peripherals coming online. There's massive upgrade possibilities with your nonlinear editing software. Now that Final Cut 7 just continues to do nothing, as we know it won't.
And it's like a zombie now. Every once in a while, it's just FCP7.
Yeah, but the funny thing is you know, we've done this digital media user a survey via our website. An interesting factoid that's come to light is that a huge number of our clients are still using FCP7, and yet we know that they are actively looking into what comes after that. But then there's a lot of folks who might be on FCP X or 10, and there's a lot of updates coming out for that. And should they do those minor point updates? Adobe always has updates coming down the pike. There's always operating system updates. Apple's doing OS updates of a major order on an annual basis now. We're just awash in upgrade possibilities.
And I would say there's always a different type of person and a type of an organization that'll drive how you upgrade. I mean, we typically see the whole gamut. From the folks that are still somehow managing to edit on a Power Mac G5 and are on 10.4 FCP5 and going, you know what, I am hitting my deadlines, I don't see what the issue is, you know, one of the fans doesn't work, but whatever, we got it working. And then you have the sort of the middle of the road moderate folks who maybe they do a refresh maybe every 3 to 4 years. And then the bleeding edge folks that just can't get enough. But somewhere in between there is probably the right happy medium to what your upgrade cycle
would be.
Well,
yeah, and you know, I'm going to speak to something, and I think we've talked about this and we agree on this. And you know, this is frankly generally Chesapeake's approach to things. I mean, we realize that we cater to clients who are in many different types of environments, individual users, all the way up through literal mega corporations and everything in between, private sector, governmental, you name it. And let's look at that kind of conservative upgrade user. You said it. I mean, some folks might have a system that's a few years old or a lot of years old, but you know what? It's meeting their immediate needs. They may not be on all the latest software, but they've got a workflow or workflows or formats that maybe aren't changing all that much. They, from kind of a business development standpoint, kind of know how long it takes to execute certain types of workflows and processes on their computer, whether it's renders or ingesting or mastering or graphic design or finishing or color correcting. You know, they know what their system does, and they've developed a valid business model that's profitable for them around that system. You know, we don't fault people in any way, shape, or form for being very conservative in those types of environments and saying, you know what, it's that whole, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and it's making me money, and I've got my model that's based around this, and maybe if the system blows up, I'll have to make some changes, and maybe if new formats come into play that this system can't deal with because of hardware or software constraints, I'll have to deal with it then, but for the time being, it's working for me.
Typically, in that scenario, the thing that pushes the conversation, whether it be an OS upgrade that no longer renders their software useful, or simply they are too far out of the cycle that the software that they have been using is simply not applicable to today's workflows. the thing that brings them into the fold is when one day somebody clicked update or the next important thing came out and they simply are rendered unable to do the work. Well, so they'll hold on.
You know, the other thing too is we live in a landscape, and we've talked about this certainly, where new formats of digital media, you know, whether it's cameras or codecs or even the workflows themselves, are so prevalent now. Delivery formats, you name it. Things are changing so much. It's so diverse and changing like every few months with new formats and such that you as a producer, as a post-production oriented kind of user, may have a client or a project that calls for your ability to support a new format very quickly. You may need to be, you know, rapidly responsive if you want to get that job. And if you find out, oh crud, Final Cut 7 doesn't handle this codec at all or efficiently, or now I need to do a bunch of time-consuming transcoding in order for my, you know, powerful system to even deal with it, I need an upgrade in power. This is the problem, because now you may feel the need to upgrade for one particular reason. Or maybe your computer breaks and now you need to buy a new computer. But oops, the new computers don't work with any of that old software anymore because it comes with a new operating system. It's these kind of unpredictable needs, be it a new thing you need to be able to support and offer your clients, or oh crud, something broke and now I need to replace it. Ooh, but I can't exactly replace like for like because I can't just get another copy of that thing from 5 years ago. This may force you as a user into a corner where now you need to be quickly adaptable. But in order to deal with that one new thing, a whole lot of baggage may come along with that as far as, ooh, but this forces me to upgrade all of my sure. plugins or the operating system or
this. The back end of the storage system, you know.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a SAN connected user and your machine poops out, this is something we run into. And I don't think we're going to dwell too much on the whole SAN infrastructure, but it's an important one because it affects many of our clients. You know, we do a lot of XSAN or StoreNext fiber channel SANs, and this requires that each connected client workstation be running a particular piece of software that allows that system to connect to this large block of workgroup storage. That workgroup storage is itself managed by server computers running particular versions of particular operating systems and particular SAN software, and that the client systems have to be running versions of those various pieces of software that make them compatible and jive with those systems that are kind of on the back end of that storage solution. And one of the rules of thumb we run into is that the clients in those XSAN or StoreNext, you know, storage environments can't be running newer operating system or XSAN client software than the operating system or SAN management software that's running on those back-end servers. So if your back-end servers are running at a slightly older version of software and your slightly older machine poops out and you need to replace it with a new one, and if that new machine doesn't work with the old versions of the software because there's no drivers built into the old version of macOS 10.5 that work, you know, with a new iMac that you may want to have be your new client workstation. If your back-end servers are themselves at 10.5 and the associated older version of the operating of the XSAN software, well, now you've got a client that isn't going to fit into the mix. And now that's going to trigger a bunch of back-end changes that need to be made to the storage platform itself. And that may mean downtime, woo! Additional costs,
jeez,
having to back up your data before you do those upgrades because of, you know, potential problems that can occur in the upgrade process. It can be
a large undertaking. It can be something that many companies at times budget for, and others are completely unaware of it as an even a consideration. I think that, you know, that at least partly is one of the reasons that equipment leasing can really be a benefit if you're aware of the cycle that you use your computers. Most guys, they might want to use a machine that's like a bleeding edge for 2 to 3 years and then know that you're going to get another one up front after your lease is over.
Yeah, it's complex. And then there's like kind of the creation software side of it, where if you have a workgroup environment with multiple users who are collaborating and a machine breaks down and needs to be replaced, and that new machine that you get as a replacement can't run the older versions of the software because it's coming with a newer operating system that isn't qualified to use those older production applications, you may now have a system that's generating project files or generating media files of newer or different formats that your colleagues, slightly older machines on their slightly older versions of software, can't open or deal with. So in work group environments that are collaborative in nature or have work group storage, these upgrade issues become much more complex and much more dynamic and really need to be thought through and managed. And this is a reason why keeping your back-end systems at newer versions of software that can accommodate different versions of client workstations hitting them, that's important. You may have these background, you know, needs to upgrade or benefits for keeping at least certain systems upgraded, even if that's not immediately clear to every last client who's connected to a workgroup system. So, you know, there are sometimes these kind of more subtle reasons why keeping on top of operating system upgrade cycles, production application upgrade cycles, et cetera, is useful because the technology landscape is always changing.
Let me pose a question to you, though. I'll play devil's advocate here, because one thing that you did say in your description of that fictional workgroup environment is there is a staid approach there. There are all these machines. They're all in the same configuration. It's working. It has worked. You can't scare me by telling me that I'm going to need to upgrade. Obviously, I know I need to upgrade at some point, but like, shouldn't I, if I run in there and then I upgrade my back end, for example, and then there's yet another OS change, then I just got to do that twice in a row. Why not wait it out for two go rounds? How do you feel about the perspective?
Well, so, and you make very valid points, my colleague Merrill. Here's how you get a gold star.
Yay, check plus.
Here's how I would answer that. It's not so much a matter of, you know, us ever trying to make our users feel that they're forced into a particular upgrade cycle, or every year you have to do a certain set of upgrades, or every time there's a new OS update, you should upgrade, or you should always be one major version behind in both operating system and production application version than what is currently available. It's not so much there's any one right way to do it that works for all users. It's to have a system at all that's scheduled, where you work it into your budget. You work it in as best as possible into your production periods so that you kind of have some time set aside every year, every 2 years, maybe every 6 months for smaller updates, where you can kind of address all of these upgrade issues, potentially hardware, definitely some OS updates, definitely some production application updates, maybe even major transitions in your systems, both hardware and software oriented. You have a plan in place. You have a general methodology. You have a general cycle you try to adhere to. It's accounted for in the budget. It's accounted for in your schedules. You make other decisions in the department with that kind of a system in mind, where maybe you buy one extra machine when you're buying workstations in a workgroup environment of the same vintage as the other ones that you're buying. So if a machine goes down hard and it can't be fixed necessarily, or maybe it's not valuable to fix it, you have another machine that can be running all those same applications
that's a
really basically good point. Ready to step in.
Yeah, you know,
and you're not
you...
forced into whatever the latest greatest machine from Apple or whoever is and its various dependencies that it then forces on you.
I mean, if you look at a cost analysis of having a scenario in which you either have one extra machine configured in the proper way or having to put a new machine into the same place and to upgrade everything else outside of the machine,
mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear. And I think it's also important to note that upgrading and pushing on the bleeding edge in the other direction isn't necessarily the best choice either.
Yes, definite pitfalls. I'm sure you can speak to some of those. I mean, having been an editor or whatnot. I mean,
yeah,
tell us about some of the risks here.
Okay, I'll give you a perfect example, which happened to me 8 years ago, but still applies today, and it relates to having a machine with Avid on it and getting a brand new iteration of OS X to put on my machine. So this is a very important one because it doesn't even enter thought. I think certainly not when you're like in edit mode and you're like, okay, but you know, I'm going to upgrade my operating system. You know, there's not necessarily a causal relation for most people when they're thinking, I'm going to upgrade my OS now, and it's just a little smiley checkbox, and you hit it, and it goes, and it's done. You get coffee, 15 minutes later, you're back, and then you try to launch Avid, and it says, meh, meh. So I think Avid's a good example. They are typically a little bit behind the curve. They do their software testing in a cycle that is not bleeding edge, and that...
Well, it's usually at least a few months behind. Yeah. I wouldn't say they're unique either.
No, they aren't, but it's...
There's this lag.
There is.
There's a lag between when they... Apple releases 10.8.2.
And with Apple's compacted release schedule of operating systems, it used to be... You know, a little bit longer between these operating systems, and the software developers
year.
Would have some more time to play, I think. But so that's a perfect example. So if you know that you have to edit on a certain OS platform if you want to use Avid in X way, that's just a scenario until they release a patch or an update, which will not be forthcoming the day that Apple announces the OS upgrade.
Same thing goes for hardware device drivers.
That's
These
correct.
Are the little pieces of software.
So we're
you have
talking
to
about
install.
Avid, right? We'll talk about Adobe. When CS6 came out, all the AJA drivers that were working in CS5.5, I mean, we had to wait a very long time to see those come into fruition on CS6. Again, two very large vendors who are developing for platforms on an international stage, but they did not get the OS compatibility until several months after the
fact. Yeah, and you have to understand, you know, as an end user, as a creative, why are they taking time to support these new OSs? Because they know that their professional users most likely, I would say they ought to, understand that hardcore reliability of their system and its ability to do the key job that earns that creative professional their money to do certain types of projects, that's the number one concern, and not necessarily is it the creative professional's concern, or it shouldn't be, to get every last little cool new feature on day one that an operating system maker may make available in a new OS update just because it's kind of nice to have. But if that's not going to in some way help a key objective to you and your business as a digital content creator, really you need to be concerned about reliability. And those device makers, those software developers, they do a lot of testing.
Time.
They do a lot of testing to make sure their stuff is going to continue to work. And even though they do get access to developer builds of these OS updates before they hit the public, they still want to do continued testing and make sure that they've done all the testing with the final shipping versions of those operating systems before they go ahead and release their own updates to their users that are like, okay, we know this will work. Because they take a lot of heat when things break.
They do. They do. And even if the thing that breaks isn't their fault, if it's just interoperability with an OS and it's a behavior that the OS has changed since the last go-around. Actually, a good example, an instance where, you know, this is typical. We're recording this podcast on the PreSonus AudioBox 4.4 VSL, right? And I've got 10.8 on here. I had 10.7. We did the update, and we tried to do a podcast, what, 3-4 months ago? And the audio hardware just wouldn't be recognized. Digging on the forums, you come to find, okay, well, here is not an officially sanctioned but unsigned installer. You know, we haven't released the 10.8 one. We're still going through testing. But, you know, here for the super
beta,
user.
The beta, you know.
Here's the beta, unsigned, DMG, install it. And that's what we're using now, and it's working just fine. But, you know, this is pretty
But basically,
typical.
We're the worst possible example of how you should do what we're recommending, so... You know, we were kind of lucky there, but you know, live through us vicariously, oh listener. You know, don't necessarily, you know, update to 10.8 not having first checked to see if your audio interface
right.
or whatnot
oh, yeah.
is going to work.
I'm saying, yeah, I learned from my mistakes, and
you did it purely to be an example of what not to do
that,
for
yes.
our listeners.
For
I
4 months
point
in the future,
out.
I mean, like it's planning. but you know, so I think you know it would be good. What are some like. Indicators that maybe it might be time for you to upgrade your hardware. A couple of key ones, obviously, if you're still on anything that's pre-Intel Mac, I think
definitely,
it's time.
Definitely right out. And I would even say, you know,
Mac
Apple,
Pro ones.
Apple has now broken even their Intel-based processor machines into several camps. 10.8, the operating system update, has some of the earlier Intel Macs not supported any longer because of certain particularities in their architecture, or Apple simply not wanting to necessarily support such older machines because it required more resources for them. And maybe, just maybe, they want to encourage people to buy new machines by, you know, eventually making sure their OS loses support for the oldest ones.
But even then,
even if you've got some of the earliest Intel Macs, I'd say it's probably time to update.
Sure. So early Intel Macs, and we're talking 2005, 2006 at this point, and that it's about time for a new machine anyway, even if you had the top of the line at the time. Now, one of the things I do love about Apple machines, obviously, is that they have, for me at least, a longevity that is unmatched.
Second to none.
Yes. You know, insert requisite I love Apple comment.
But then
here,
we should say the following, and we hit on this certainly in the Mac Pro episode, you know, Wither the Mac Pro. If you have to update your machine right now, the reality is the Mac Pros really haven't changed in over 4 years now.
That's true.
And yet, an upgrade option that many of our clients are both considering and now actively moving for are using the highest-end 27-inch iMacs, these latest Ivy Bridge generation processor equipped with hardcore nice NVIDIA graphics cards that the Adobe applications leverage for hardware acceleration, actually using the high-end iMacs as Mac Pro replacements. And that's a whole other upgrade challenge because they don't have PCI slots.
At least not without a Thunderbolt breakout.
Yeah, you can use a Thunderbolt enclosure for your PCI cards via the products from Sonnet
or Magma.
It can get
really kludgy and become spaghetti junky.
It can
junky.
Be. You have to do your research to see if your particular PCI cards are supported. We should say PCI Express cards are supported by those third-party enclosures. And so, you know, Sonnet has these enclosures, and you can look at their site and see, can I put my AJA card in there? Can I put my Fibre Channel card in there? And now have it be this external Thunderbolt device that connects to the Thunderbolt port in an iMac. Or, ooh, I'm on a Fibre Channel SAN. You know, I need to learn how I can kind of get a Thunderbolt Fibre Channel interface for an iMac.
You know, it's very robust, and there's really the sky's the limit when it comes to the peripheral for Thunderbolt. I think Thunderbolt's gotten a lot of flack, and I think that at least from a consumer level, their value hasn't been necessarily the best demonstrated.
Well, it never really was a consumer technology as far as I'm concerned. It was always for the pros.
I don't disagree. And you're starting to see the consumer level adoption in the LaCie.
Yeah, or prosumer, I would call it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about the iMacs, and this addresses some of what we were talking about earlier. The latest iMacs will only ever run 10.8. So let's say your hardware is feeling long in the tooth and you're a Final Cut 7 user. Well, the new iMacs can't be downgraded to an earlier operating system because it's the OS itself that contains the hardware drivers for the various hardware subsystems in that computer, like its motherboard and processor and internal chipsets and GPU accelerator and all these things. And so it has to be a 10.8 machine. Here's the problem with software is that Apple, with their operating systems, kind of has these three categories that they put their older applications into as far as how they are supported at an operating system level. And there's the, we are going to make sure that this software continues to work with newer operating systems category. That's the one that's the best, right? There's the middle category of, we're going to try to make sure that when we update the operating system, we go out of our way to not break anything in the old software, but we're not actively supporting it, so to speak, either. And then there's this third category of,
we don't care.
Boom. Screw it. You know, if it breaks something, it's so be
whatever.
It. That was so old, we don't care. And here's the thing. Final Cut 7, the latest versions of Final Cut 7, are now in this third category
as of
10.8. So if you have a new iMac that you buy, and that's your hardware upgrade for your CPU, and you get the right AJA interface, you know, that has a Thunderbolt port on it, and you know, you migrate all your data.
You're not using FCP 7.
Well, you can. What we've seen at this point, I don't think almost any of our clients are running FCP 7 on a 10.8 machine. From what we gather, nothing is necessarily broken at this point, but it's our understanding that potentially minor functionalities are affected, and even if they're not, Apple could release a minor point update that just totally destroys Final Cut 7, and now you're SOL and need to like think of a whole new editing platform that you want to adopt.
I think it's important. This is a good seg because you're talking about the software itself. So we've said, you know, obviously, if you're dealing with old Intel hardware or old Power Mac hardware, that's one thing. But also, Is it a 32-bit application? FCP7, a good example. There is no 64-bit version of FCP7, and if you are relying on core group of programs that are still 32-bit, that is a clear indicator that things need to change for you probably very soon.
Well, let me spell something out for our listeners, because, you know, terms like 32-bit and 64-bit get thrown around, and they can be, those terms are used often in several different capacities, and I just want to summarize a little bit here why that's useful for a creative professional user. So usually when we're talking about 32-bit apps versus 64-bit apps, we're talking about the amount of memory or RAM, the actual solid-state RAM chips in your computer, that out of your total RAM, how much of that RAM can an individual program actually make use of at a given moment? And the general rule of thumb is that 32-bit applications can really only utilize 2 gigs of RAM total per application. And the way, what that means is you may have a system that has 16 gigs of RAM, but if you're in Final Cut most of the time all day long, okay, maybe your operating system is using about a gig. Final Cut can use a couple of gigs. Maybe you've got a couple other programs open and those are using a gig or two, but you're probably not fully utilizing your RAM. And the problem with that is RAM as a short-term storage system within your computer that's kind of managing what you're doing at a given moment on your computer, whereas the hard drive is the long-term storage, your RAM is really holding data that's involved in what you're doing right then and there. RAM is way faster than hard drives, and so you want as much as possible to utilize the full set of RAM that you have, because it's going to make your computer run much, much faster. So if you're using an old app on a 64-bit capable machine with a bunch of RAM, a 32-bit app isn't going to use it all effectively, and you're going to be doing things slower, whether it's rendering or your real-time video previews or many actions associated with digital content creation. A 64-bit app is usually much faster because of the RAM it's utilizing. And I think this is what you were leading to.
Yes.
Premiere Pro and the latest versions of Media Composer are 64-bit. You may have a current generation Apple machine, but if you're running Final Cut 7, you're not taking advantage of your hardware. You're not taking advantage probably of multi-core processing capability that you have. You're not taking advantage of your graphical processor unit, the GPU, that the Adobe apps, for instance, heavily leverage.
Mercury Playback Engine, all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, the so-called Mercury Playback Engine in the Adobe applications that are now in Photoshop, in After Effects, in Premiere Pro, they all use your GPU. Final Cut never even used your GPU to accelerate any types of video processing tasks. So,
and what about, just since we're in Professor Nick mode here, where's hyperthreading come into play here?
This is the multi-core. I mean, hyperthreading is, you know, you have a CPU, and these days CPUs are multiple cores, which means it's kind of lots of little baby CPUs built into one. And the latest Mac Pros can have up to 2 CPUs, each with 6 cores each for 12 cores. But Intel, who makes these chips, has a function on their CPUs called hyperthreading, which means that every core on a CPU can actually basically handle 2 tasks at once. So a 6-core CPU kind of acts like a logical 12-core CPU, which means a 12-core total machine with 2 6-core CPUs actually acts logically like a 24 CPU machine. So think about that. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, we just had one processor, and now a high-end Mac Pro basically acts like a 24-processor computer in one because of hyperthreading. But in order for hyperthreading to work effectively to accelerate the speed at which you do things, in order for you to even get any benefit at all of these processor cores, you need software that's what's called multi-threaded. Threads are the various individual activities of which there may be many running in parallel per program you're using that are basically the actions that are taking place in the computer system to do what it is you're doing. If programs are of an older variety that are single-threaded, you can only take advantage of one processor core or one of the 2 tasks per core in a hyper-threading core. That's possible. And all your other cores may be sitting there idle. a reason to upgrade in addition to getting 64-bit applications that can gobble all the RAM you've got, in addition to getting GPU acceleration, you know, for Premiere Pro or After Effects and a machine that's got a nice NVIDIA card in it, is that the newer software is multi-threaded. So you finally get to take advantage of all of this distributed parallel processing power that these greatly multi-core CPU architectures offer. So, you know, these are all really good reasons to evaluate either a hardware upgrade to get hardware that has these functionalities, but even more so, maybe just moving up to newer or alternative versions of production level software.
Sure.
Like moving from FCP7 to Premiere Pro or FCP7 to Avid Media Composer, because these pieces of software now actually allow you to take advantage of hardware you may have had sitting in front of you for a few years. So yes.
That's a good example.
Very good driver for evaluating upgrades, even if your current system seems to be doing what it needs to do today to get the job done. Maybe you could be getting the job done twice as fast and thus doing twice as much billable work per year just by upgrading your piece of software. So these are things I'm going to point out, Merle, that I think we've talked about. We're going to try to start doing some actual benchmarks that we publish to our website that
benchmarks.
Users... I love benchmarks because
benchmarks.
You know, what we could do is we could generate a sequence with a bunch of different effects and transitions and whatnot, and on the same machine show how quick it is to render in Final Cut 7, then it, you know, have it running in Premiere Pro on that machine or Media Composer so people can evaluate, ooh, maybe there's a benefit to just switching out my core piece of editing software because now I'm taking better advantage of my hardware and it's way faster.
I mean, even anecdotally, we're talking a four-year-old Mac Pro. Maybe it's an 8-core. That's still with a 32-bit, you know, FCP7, right? You've got a whole workflow. Maybe that's that involves transcoding to Apple ProRes and then editing in this 32-bit application. By virtue of maybe, I don't know, Adobe CSX, getting Premiere in there, right? Just right then and there, you've eliminated a transcode process.
Possibly, yeah, because Premiere,
depending on your workflow,
Premiere is better at handling these native codecs without having to turn it into something like a ProRes than Final Cut 7 ever was, again, because Premiere can use the full extent of hardware you probably already have sitting
right
in front of you, whereas Final Cut 7 cannot.
And then, of course, outside of being able to read the native codec, you have a program that is designed to at least take advantage of 8 cores.
Yep.
So those two things, simply by making sure that you have up-to-date software, can really change the landscape of the work that you do.
Well, and then let's, you know, again, you may have been happy in Final Cut 7 land with an ATI graphics card that came with your system. You know, even if you just bought this system in the last couple of years, you know, Apple's build-to-order options have really been pretty oriented around ATI cards for a couple of years now. And the newer Adobe software with this GPU-accelerated Mercury playback engine that accelerates all manner of video-oriented and graphics-oriented tasks really only works with some of the later NVIDIA cards, which you can get as third-party cards that can replace your ATI graphics card. And so maybe you've got a Mac Pro from a year or two ago, and maybe you've already been running Premiere Pro, but just the upgrade of one graphics processor card could dramatically accelerate your processes because now you've got this Mercury playback engine capability.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater just yet.
Yeah.
I think is what Nick's saying.
You only have a new baby.
I do.
You're not thinking of throwing it away with the bathwater, are you?
No, I'm thinking of upgrading him with like cybernetic arms and wings. So
you'll have the first like NVIDIA-powered child with the Mercury playback.
Yeah, he does hyper-threading in his diaper.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now Merrill
2.0 is, he's good. But, you know, the other thing about making a decision with regard to upgrades, I think we've talked a lot about the technical aspects and a little bit of the budgetary aspects, but I think ultimately this is a decision, obviously, that should not be taken lightly, but it's one that needs to be a part of your strategy. You simply cannot go blind into the world of the work that you do without having a little bit of a sense of what's going on. With
yeah,
this stuff.
Yeah.
You have to be informed.
Absolutely. And even if you don't have immediate pressures bearing down on you to do an upgrade, be doing your research. Try to keep abreast of what's Apple up to, what's HP or Rain Computers up to on the hardware front, what's Adobe up to. I mean, Adobe's pretty blatant now. There's pretty much going to be a major Creative Suite upgrade every year. It's probably going to hit right around the NAB meetings and convention in April that happens every year in Las Vegas.
You know what I like to call those now?
NAB.
MAU?
MAU?
I said now, not MAU.
Oh, no, NAB.
Oh, no, I said, do you know what I like to call those, meaning the upgrade cycles?
Oh, I thought you meant NAB.
No, yeah. No, I call NAB NAB. But, no, I like to call them the Maddens of the software world.
Oh, like the Madden football.
Yeah,
game,
Madden football yeah. every
there's,
single
there's
year.
One every year
there's
know?
One every year. There's one every year, and it's always basically the same damn game with a couple of new stats and models. Every once in a while, they revamp it, but it's not a new year unless there's a new Madden game and there's and it's out to play. And actually, the same thing with the Call of Duty franchise now, frankly. But
you keep coming back to Duty.
Yeah, Call of Duty, indeed. But that's D-U-T-Y. That's the same way now. So we saw that starting with CS5.
Yeah, most of these production software developers, they want to be able to kind of release a flurry of press releases usually once a year. So we know in the video industry, many of these are timed to coincide with the annual NAB, you know, events. So count on those. Know that new hardware tends to come out every 9 to 12 months for the most part. I mean, that hasn't been true for the Mac Pro for a while. I'm frankly expecting something to happen interesting this year. We'll obviously keep our listeners informed, but stay abreast. And I will say this, I think we like to say this regularly, but we hope people consider it. Think of us as a resource. We're geeks. I go home every night and I like spend 2 hours reading about the same geeky crap I was looking at work all day long.
Don't tell them.
No, it's true. I have dreams about this stuff. I have no life, people. A little more than I used to, but very little.
Right. No, it's good. I actually read technical manuals while changing diapers.
I often have been sitting in a bath reading either white papers
or, I just imagine tea
yet,
lights and, like,
just,
you know,
manuals, like actual, like,
just
like
candlelight everywhere.
Bound.
A dolly shot comes in. Nick has got his hair up and he's got his highlighter out. He's going through the technical.
I've got
manual.
Like a manual in front of me for, like, oh, look at this.
Barry White is playing.
It's, you know, some rose petals floating on the water.
Totally.
You know, with some. Oh, never mind.
We just described a set of, like, a meatloaf video.
We could make that video.
We could. Well, I will do anything for you, but I won't do that. And what is it? Upgrade the sand?
Something like that.
But anyway, you know.
So we digress. But use us as a resource if you're not now sufficiently freaked out by us personally. call us.
Even if you are.
Call. Especially
use your
you
disdain
are.
To ask us for help.
we'll prove that we're actually more normal than we come across in this podcast.
I don't know about that. But
call us. Email us. Please.
We won't lie to you.
Use us as the geeks we are. Use us.
We will be there for you.
It's kind of like that Eurythmics song.
Yeah.
You know, some of them want to use you.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking
want
of a different.
To be used by you. Well, we want to be used by you.
Are you saying we're sweet dreams and we're made of this?
Something like that.
Okay.
But that's anyway, I think we've.
Why don't we wrap this up? What do you say?
I think we've kind of gone into most of the considerations that we either talk to our clients about or people voice to us about various types of upgrades. Core hardware, peripheral hardware, back-end storage hardware, minor operating system upgrades, major operating system upgrades, minor application upgrades, major application upgrades or transitions. We've covered some bases, and it is complex. Keep it in your mind, and we're here to help you.
That's right. So be sure to check us out next time on the Workflow Show.
Thank you, folks.